in the final shot of the third quarter. It's Kemba fires it, and makes it!
What's going on, everyone? Welcome, Queen City Hoops readers, Hornets fans, to episode 14 of Buzz Beat, your only Charlotte Hornets A-team podcast over at Almighty Baller Podcast Network. This is Richie, your co-host. Today we have a special episode in which my co-host Spencer brings on his good friend John Michael Griffith to discuss the Hornets, and also they discuss a lot of draft prospects. They had just gotten back from a Kentucky Wildcat game on Saturday. They were able to see Malik Monk in person as he scored 30 second-half points in Lexington against the Florida Gators. You know, one of the better defenses in the nation, even without their injured center, John Egbunu. I'm sure this game sparked the discussion as they talked about several names in this year's upcoming draft, something as Hornets fans we probably need to become familiar with. So in the previous episode, you were without Spencer, but in today's episode, you guys will be without yours truly, me. So hope you guys enjoy this episode, and please rate and review us on iTunes. Thank you.
All right, welcome to special edition Buzz Beat. This is your host Spencer Percy here with a really good friend and a really big Hornets fan, John Michael Griffith. We grew up together. You haven't heard him before. You almost heard him. We decided to scratch a pod, really an epic pod, I think.
It was
epic.
It had some flair.
It was good. So anyways, we decided to scratch it at the last second. We did it over the Christmas break and decided not to air it. But here we are, and we're going to talk some Hornets right now, and I think it's a really good Hornets conversation following the trade deadline. The trade deadline, it was a really entertaining one, I think. I think it's an underrated trade deadline.
It was. There were some moves that happened. It was, you know, obviously the sexiest thing being the Cousins move. But there was a lot of, you know, underlying deals. There were some deals that I really thought were good. I liked the addition of P.J. Tucker in Toronto. I thought that was a good move. Dallas getting Nerlens Noel and hopefully building around Harrison Barnes and Nerlens Noel for the future. I enjoyed that. It was a good trade deadline. It was fun. It will at least – what I always look for out of a trade deadline is, are you going to change the course of the NBA season here? And I think it did that. And so to me, that's the fun of it. That's the beauty of it, is that we're gonna see actual results and transitions from the trade deadline.
So the Hornets stood pat, and I think that's pretty much, like, it's definitely what I expected them to do. And I think the obvious reason is that they're stuck with really shitty contracts right now, and they just don't really have anywhere to go. Michael, what do you in the next? All right, let me present the question this way: in the next year and a half, try to give me, you know, some kind of synopsis of where, or not a synopsis, that's not the right word, but just give me an idea of where you think the Hornets are going, and like what. What is the best case scenario for them in the next year and a half?
So basically what you're saying is year and a half. So we're talking about finishing out this season, mm-hmm. and then what's going to happen next year. Are you talking about as far as personnel?
Or, no, exactly. Yeah, you hit on that. And let's cover some draft too, because I think the draft is going to be a big deal for the Hornets this year.
That's a sore subject among us. Fan base.
Right now, unless they really strike a balance here, which it doesn't appear they will, they're going to be in the lottery.
It's coming, and this is a strong draft. This is a draft that.
All right, so give me.
We've been talking about
year and a half, 1 year and a half. Give me like what you think's important. I don't want you to like predict every single, you know, aspect of the Hornets the next year and a half, but just give me some things that come to your mind that are definitely going to happen for the Hornets the next year and a half, and they're definitely going to be important.
Well, I think it's kind of cliche to say in this NBA, but I think that you need to obviously address, there's a shooting issue there, and there's a second unit issue there. And every good, strong NBA playoff team has a second unit they're comfortable putting on the floor, and at least, you know, some second units can go out and make up ground, but you're at least going to hold on to what your first unit's done, right? You're gonna at least, you know, not give up anything,
right?
when that second unit gets on the floor. So there's an obvious shooting issue there. Man, the Hornets are just interesting. I think you need to address that probably first and foremost in the draft, especially if you're going to keep Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I mean, you've got to put guys who can knock it down around that kid. It's interesting. We were talking about this earlier, his age. He's so young. I know he's not necessarily super popular among Hornets fans, but the guy serves a purpose. He can be a good piece on a team. You just have to have the right guys around him. I don't think our roster is built for that at this moment. So we need to address a shooting issue, and then we need to add some depth.
It's through the draft, right?
Yeah, through the draft. I mean, but who? It's a strong draft. Even though it's strong, I think it's still top heavy. I mean, obviously, there's guys out there that you would covet. You would think you would covet. Now, I would whether say or not Cho and Jordan covet,
yeah,
what everybody else thinks.
I would say every draft is top heavy, though.
No, that's fair, and that's true because, you know, you're going to have guys who are going to make more of an impact than others. But there's a way to draft smart, you know, and try to maximize out your value. And whether that can include, you know, not drafting somebody, making a move.
Do you think that...
Which we should have done with Boston. I mean, obviously we know this, but...
Yeah.
We made a... It's just that. I mean, I know Frank Kaminsky's serving a purpose. It's not necessarily efficient.
Talk about Frank for a second.
I like Frank. I think he's a... You know, he can be a good NBA player. He's just... I feel like the Hornets are almost trying to, like, revolve an offense around him at the moment. And it's just strange.
It's going to be hard.
It's just strange.
It's going to be hard.
I don't get it. I mean, he's capable of hitting shots and stuff. He's not a great defender by any means. He can rebound the basketball some, but he's just... I mean, if you're getting 23, 24 points, that's fine. But if it's off 16, 17, 18 shots, I'm not sure how fine that is for Charlotte.
Yeah, he can rebound the basketball because Charlotte plays a shell type of defense where they really...
He serves a purpose
really,
in a
really
Clifford...
shut off the paint. And...
He serves a purpose in a Clifford system. However, I'm not sure that's something you want to hang your hat on.
I think, for the future. There's a serious like dichotomy about Frank Kaminsky because I don't know how good of a player he actually is.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he has a ton of skill. I think he shows it on offense in a game like that against Sacramento. Like, he played really well.
Sure, and he was efficient. That's not always the case. I think he's 50% from the floor today.
But, you know, like, for Clifford, I don't know. I'm not a Clifford offensive, like, protagonist.
No, it's hard to be.
Right, and I think Frank Kaminsky makes Clifford look like this, like, new age coach that he's really not. You know, Clifford's definitely a defensive coach, and that's where my biggest question comes in with Frank Kaminsky is, like, I just don't think, like, with the team that is going to be defensive minded, bless you.
Thank you.
You know, and it's gonna like that's gonna be Clifford's team, right? Like, they're gonna be defensive minded from the onset. Like, I don't know where Frank Kaminsky really fits into that scheme.
To play on what you just said, there's nothing worse than being an NBA team without an identity. Mm-hmm. In the league, you have to have an identity. You have to have something that you can hang your hat on. And for Clifford teams and for the Hornets, that's been, you know, defense. But yeah, like you said, I'm not sure that he's, you know, he's what you need offensively there.
Well, I mean, look, he adds serious offensive value because he stretches the floor and he allows the Hornets to play five out and he makes life easier on Kemba and really he just makes life easier on everybody else because there's a shit ton of space.
Yeah, you gotta be able to space.
Right. You know,
obviously.
So he just creates all this space for people to operate in. But on the defensive end, which is where Clifford is known as a good coach, like, I don't know. I just don't know. Let me ask you this. I have a serious question for you. I went on WFNC earlier in the week, and they asked me to come on to preview the trade deadline, and, you know, I'm sure, you know, Travis Hancock, shout out, my boy T-Bone.
Good guy. Good Twitter follow as well.
A great Twitter follow.
Great Twitter follow.
And Chris McLean, they do a great job over there. And so I came on, and I couldn't help myself, Jim. I told myself I wouldn't do it. But I had
I've heard
to
this
bring...
Before.
Yeah. I had to bring up the deal that Charlotte passed up with Frank Kaminsky. Now, they wanted to ask me, well, why can't Charlotte make a deal here at this deadline? And you know, basically, you know, let's improve the roster now. It seems like what they want to do.
Because you, and I explained to him, handcuffed yourself.
Exactly. And I explained to him, they can't.
Yeah.
Like, unless Cho gets really, really creative, which he has in the past. Let's give Rich Cho credit. But but when they turned that down, that deal from Boston, like, it was always going to handcuff them unless Frank Kaminsky ended up being an absolute stud. And he didn't end up being an absolute stud, and that's not a shocker to anyone.
Not that he's a bad player, but it's not.
But that's why they are. Like, that's a huge. Look, there's people on Twitter. Bradford Combs is one of them. I love you, Bradford. I mean, you have a lot of great thoughts, but you're wrong. we absolutely can talk about the past, because the past has everything to do with why we are where we are right now.
Yeah, it shapes the future.
Right. In turning down that deal is, to me,
I'll never understand
60-80% of why Charlotte is where they are right now. They don't have flexibility because they did not take that trade.
None. And there's no depth really to speak of on that roster.
No. And it's full of bad contracts. And look, I'm not saying that signing Nick Batum last summer was a bad decision. And I'm also not saying...
Not for what we gave up.
And I'm also not saying that signing Marvin Williams to the deal they signed him to was a bad decision. It's a questionable decision.
It's not my favorite decision.
No, right. It's more questionable than the Nick Batum contract.
It's an easy decision to hit on right now. It's an easy decision to hate on right now because Williams isn't shooting the ball that well. It's, you know, the Hornets are reeling, and you want to, as a Hornets fan with this built up frustration right now, you feel like you need to have somewhere you can point the finger.
Williams isn't an easy
target for that right now.
But here's the craziest part. They can still make both of those deals, whether you think they're good deals or bad deals, and also take the package that Boston offered them and have those four draft picks and have that flexibility. Like, they can do all those things as well. Like, they can make those two re-signings and have this one. That's what's baffling to me. It's not like these two conversations are mutually exclusive. Like,
not at all. You can, like, yeah, you can still...
You could have done...
You have flexibility.
You could have had both... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It is. It truly is. What to think... It just would have added... It would have added so much excitement to our process. It would have added hope. I think when people see the Hornets right now, and there's nothing wrong with being a 7 or an 8 seed.
Yeah.
Which is not even looking like it's going to happen at this point.
I don't think they're making the
playoffs. But, you know, you're playing a little better. You're a 7-8 seed, whatever. That's fine. Like, I get that. But you still want to have a hope for the future as a fan. You want something to be excited about when you wake up in the morning to think, And, you know, you can still have that. But, like, it's just... And even if you don't do the deal with Boston, I mean, yeah, it should have happened, but I don't understand what was wrong with Devin Booker in that draft. I feel like he could be helping Charlotte right now.
To Charlotte's defense, I mean, Charlotte wasn't the only team out there not totally believing in Devin Booker, and there's a lot of teams that look stupid right now.
That's fine,
but
I mean, the
letting
guy...
him get drafted, what, 13th, 14th, or something like that, right?
Yeah, about a guy. I mean, it's one of those things where you almost kind of read too much into what was around him at Kentucky, and, like, sure, there was a little bit of unknown because of the studs around him in college, but, like, sometimes the Hornets have just gotten in their own heads during draft time. They've outthought themselves. They're too smart for their own good, or they think they are.
Yeah, and I don't know.
You got a guy in Booker who's just passing the eye test, and I'm not saying that you can just base it off that, but, I mean, there's something to be said for when you just watch a guy play and you're like, man, that guy can really shoot the basketball.
And I've heard this. I agree with everything you just said. I think it's brilliant. And I've also heard this, and I think it's very, very, very applicable, is when you have an owner who starts getting fascinated with players, Sacramento's, like what he did with Buddy Hield, like, you know, that whole thing, and like, oh, Buddy Hield, straight for Buddy Hield, and they'll just send DeMarcus Cousins, like,
let's just send the best center
stupid.
In the NBA.
And
away.
You know what people never talk about? Or they did at the time, and now they never do. Like, Michael Jordan was fascinated with Frank Kaminsky.
Absolutely fascinated.
That's the only reason that deal, the Boston offer never happened, is because Michael Jordan.
Absolutely.
Like, say what you want, I know that to be a fact.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan wanted Frank Kaminsky, and you defend it any way you want, but I know it to be a fact. I've heard it's people that I know who know what they talk. It is. So my point is this: when you have an owner that gets that involved with it,
the day to day
talent evaluation part of stuff, whether or not you're the ex best basketball player of all time or not. Yeah. It's not a good business model, because the reason I hire a GM is to hire the best guy that can do the job and get out of his way and let him do his job.
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, you can strong arm, but is that really what's best for the organization?
And I'm not, exactly. And I'm not saying that Michael Jordan hasn't gotten better at that, but until he truly lets the decisions be made by the general manager, this is not going to change. Like, what's the difference between Vivek in Sacramento and Jordan in Charlotte? It doesn't get talked about as much in Charlotte, but I really don't think there's that much of a difference, because at the end of the day, he's the owner. He gets to do whatever he wants. But
and
if
he's
going to insert
Michael
him,
Jordan.
But if he's going to insert himself into these kind of decisions when he's not the one on the road going and watching these guys and scouting and doing all this stuff, I think that's risky business. Like,
it's absolutely risky business, and it's potentially set us on a course of this that, you know, we could smother away in mediocrity, and it's set us on. We'll never know what the outcome of it truly. Obviously, the tangible results that we have, but we'll never know what could have been, because he got fascinated with a stretch guy from Wisconsin who was good in the system and could knock down shots, and he had a great tournament, and I understand that he took down, you know, the 38-0 Kentucky. But it's sent us on a path of unknown variables, and it's hard to swallow as a Hornets fan.
All right, so we've talked about that a lot. The trade deadline has passed now, and the Hornets did not make the deal. That a lot of people were hoping for, but, you know, they couldn't make a deal. They're strapped with really bad contracts, and we've touched on all that. We're going to try to keep this Hornets. When Jamaica and I get together, you know, it's interesting, because it's not interesting. It's just, like, what we do. Like, we dance on a lot of different kind of stuff. I've been actually really chomping the bit to ask Jamaica this a while, but I want to know, now that we're in that draft lottery conversation, and you could see the Hornets potentially picking in the top 14, I want to start talking about some guys that, you know, Hornets could be looking at, and I think it starts with a guy that we saw today, Malik Monk. I don't think the Hornets are going to have an opportunity to draft him, you know, because I think he's just so good. I think he's the best player in the country. Lonzo Ball is close set. It's tough.
He's special.
There's Lonzo Ball,
he's
and then
a special
there's
kid.
Malik Monk, and it's like head and head. But I watched Malik Monk in person today, and holy crap, that guy can really play.
He's a stud. When he gets in that zone and he starts deciding he's going to take over that game, he just hurts you in so many different ways. It's truly amazing what he's capable of whenever he does get in that zone. He's just a scorer. He knows how to score. Seems like he was born to do it. He's a guy that would be great for Charlotte, right? I mean, yeah, we would welcome that. We would love that. I'm not sure that Charlotte's going to be necessarily in a position to make that pick. That would be nice, but, you know, if that doesn't happen, then it is what it is, basically. It's interesting, this draft, because you have to think of, you know, what you're doing here. Are you going to, you know, what do you really need as Charlotte? Like, what are you going to put around Kimba? What are you going to put around MKG? How are you going to make that roster what it really needs to be moving forward? And are you even capable of doing that, you know, with the draft pick that you maybe will get? I mean, who knows what Charlotte's going to end up with? You're thinking it may be in that 12, 13, 14 range. Here's a guy that I'm going to throw out at you that's very interesting. And there's a lot of unknowns about this guy. But he is somebody that maybe nobody's seen. You know, maybe some of these listeners haven't seen nationally. And here's a name. Justin Patton.
Yeah, the kid.
From Creighton.
From Creighton. I've heard nothing but good things about him, but I haven't seen him play.
That he could, you know, maybe do something. He's going to be a guy who's going to be right around there, fringe 12, 13, 14 pick.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously you just added a Plumlee to the roster. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't draft Patton because of it. But he's got a lot of upside. He does.
Tons of upside, I've heard.
You know, he's raw, but he's bouncy, and he's lengthy.
Yeah.
You know, and he's actually, at one point in this season, I know this to be true, he was 7 of 13 from 3.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not falling in love with the idea that this guy's going to become
small a small sample size, but still, he can obviously shoot it.
He can hit a shot, right? I mean, there's plenty of guys that go their entire college careers and don't even attempt 7 threes.
Right.
So, you know, there's a name.
Here's a guy that, we talked to Brian Geisinger a few weeks ago. He's a Sports Channel 8 guy. Have you ever looked at the GIF recaps?
I have not.
In the ACC? You have.
Oh, yes. You've sent me that. It's great. It's beautiful. Every week, it's really well done.
Brian Geisinger.
Yes, I do know exactly one of what you're talking about. He's, sure, you've shared that with me.
Shout out. He's one of the architects of those. He was telling me a little bit about Jonathan Isaac. And I think
Florida
Jonathan
State.
Yes. And I think he's actually top 7, I think. Top 7 in Chad Ford's most recent mock draft. He's a very interesting guy. Have you watched him play?
I've seen a little bit of him. I have admittedly not seen much or probably even enough to really evaluate. But I do know that he's an interesting prospect. And there's a lot of people out there who think that he's going to make an impact in the NBA.
I think he's definitely going to make an impact. And Isaac is one of those guys. God, he is freakishly long.
He is. He's got some
many length. Ways about as much as I do right now. Like, but,
yeah.
But when that guy, like, fills into his body, like, if he gets to 200 pounds, holy shit. Like, Jonathan Isaac is a guy that everyone should keep an eye on. He has the skill and the offensive game of a guy like Kevin Durant, you know. And
yeah.
That
may be pushing it a little bit. But
he does not have the dribble game of a Kevin Durant, but you know, but he has every shot. You know, he has the basketball IQ. He has the shot blocking ability.
Sure, there's flashes.
I'm telling you what, Jonathan Isaac. I really honestly believe he could be a guy in 2 or 3 years who we're looking back and saying, how did everybody not know who this guy was in college?
It's
He's unbelievably talented.
I agree with that. He plays against great competition night in and night out. Florida State's had an incredible season. They're probably primed for a pretty good tournament run. Definitely a team that's somehow stayed under the radar nationally.
Right.
Even though they're doing their thing. They're just chugging along.
They are loaded.
They're loaded.
They're
capable of a tournament run.
They're capable of a national championship run.
It's possible. You know, that's going to be new territory for Florida State basketball.
Sure it is. But
it's unexplored waters, but that's the NCAA tournament. Am I going to be shocked if the first weekend of April rolls around and you see Florida State playing in a Final Four? Absolutely not. It's a viable possibility.
It's that part of the season where I'm like, show me 4 more rosters, more talent than Florida State's, and it's going to be pretty hard for you to do that.
No, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw 2 more names at you. Potential draft picks
and
for Charlotte.
Because you're an SEC guy.
Yeah.
But I want you to include whatever names you're already going to say.
Sure.
And we got about 7 minutes, then we got to go. I want you to give me a name of the SEC. Because you're an SEC guy. John's a big Kentucky fan. We're in Lexington right now recording this. He's been a Kentucky fan as long as I've known him. He lives in Lexington, so he knows the SEC well. Give me an SEC guy outside of Kentucky that is someone we should watch.
Wow.
Frazier kid, Georgia.
That's interesting.
It's
Tim Frazier? I don't know Tim Frazier. I think he's a European.
He can. Well, yeah. I mean, the guy.
Too undersized.
Yeah, he's sometimes.
So small.
There's things, though, when I watch him play that he does that I see, and I'm like, wow, that was literally Isaiah Thomas at Washington.
He has, like, he will stick a knife in your throat.
I've seen.
He's that kind of player, you know?
I've definitely seen some of that.
But who's the NBA guy in the SEC, John, outside of Kentucky? Because they're out there, and I think we might have seen one or two on the floor left.
It is possible. Man, I just – in the first round of this draft, though,
yeah,
I see three Kentucky guys, and I think that might be it from the SEC. Now, I see guys from Florida that have potential, obviously, today. We saw Allen. I mean, that kid was a gamer. He stuck shots. He scored –
Robinson could be a potential close to 30, second-round pick.
30 points. It's possible.
I think Allen's a European player. I think he's a baller, but he just gives you nothing outside of just a volume score.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he's – I'd have to watch him more, but I think today was just really hot. And I don't know that he gives you more than just like, hey, I got hot today. You know, but he's not this, like, incredible shooter, right?
Absolutely not. No. Like, I mean, he's streaky. I would guess
that he's like 35%.
You know.
Like 3-point shooter, which is obviously not good enough for a guy who only does one.
He's probably streaky. Now, here's a name that's interesting that it kind of skipped over me at first. I'm not sure. I don't know too much about this guy, but there's a kid at Texas A&M. It's Robert Williams. Pretty interesting.
He's big, right?
Power forward, yeah. Yep. He is... I've looked at some projections. I mean, I've seen him as high as 10 on draft boards.
Really?
Absolutely. I've seen him. I've seen him at 11 to the Chicago Bulls.
What's special about him? Because you've probably seen him more than anybody.
He's a freshman.
Okay.
So that's interesting. So they got a good.
So he's 19 years old.
A good recruit.
Yeah.
Here's what this guy does. He blocks shots and he rebounds at a high rate. That is useful for team. I'm a big fan of rim protection in the NBA. I think even in today's NBA, you still have to have rim protection. You need a guy who can bolster that back line.
More than ever. Teams want to shoot threes and they want to attack the rim. So, yeah.
So, a team looking for defense, I'm not necessarily sure. I mean, the Hornets need everything. So, let's not throw anything out of the window here. But this kid, I think he's blocking like 3 or 4 shots a game. And it's playing against SEC competition. It's not the best, but I mean, it's something. So if you're looking for a name in the SEC, that's a potential name.
Okay.
That's the guy that's, if he decides to come out, could be fringe lottery and make a little noise. He's also a guy who could easily slip down even further, but that's my answer to that question.
Well, it's super interesting. The draft is going to become... more and more interesting for the Hornets, and you know, I think it's something that fans need to get ready for.
I do have two other names for you.
Oh, we got some more names. Yeah, let's go.
If you're interested.
Hey, we got about 5 minutes, and then we got to go.
Two guys that I think could potentially, if you want to talk about a little excitement for the Hornets and somebody who could come in and get on a few highlight reels and kind of give the Hornets a little edge, is Miles Bridges. He's going to be right there. He's probably going to come out. Michigan State's probably going to make the tournament. He's going to have a chance to make a little bit more of a statement on a national scene.
Left-handed guy,
electric. Mm-hmm. Not the best shooter. He can hit shots, but it's not necessarily effortless at this point. His stroke needs a little bit of work. You know, obviously the Hornets aren't in need of a lot of projects, but he's a guy, it keeps coming back to me on the Hornets that you need guys on the second unit, right? Like, you have to have a decent bench in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
He's a piece to that puzzle.
So what do you love most about Bridges' game? Because
I think
we're talking to an audience right now that doesn't know a ton about his game. I don't know a lot either. I
love the way he attacks the basket.
Freakishly athletic.
I like it. He goes in with a purpose.
And he also has an NBA body right now.
Absolutely he does. I mean, he's a stud.
Tell us his intangibles. Like, he stands at what, 6'10"?
I believe it's somewhere.
Let's look that up.
Somewhere right around there. We'll get some confirmation on this real quick.
He's 6'10". Anyway, regardless of how tall he is, that guy is like built to like match up with NBA players right now.
Absolutely. Okay. So the interesting. He's actually 6'6". Bridges.
Miles Bridges is 6'6"?
Yeah. It's
what?
Yeah. It's definitely interesting.
And we're not going to edit this out. This is perfect. This is why we talk about this stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
The Big Ten is total garbage this year, so we don't watch a lot of Big Ten basketball.
Exactly.
Wow, but he's 6'6".
But he's strong. He's strong.
What, let me guess.
I mean, he's not going to be a guy who's like posting people up 225. In the NBA. Yeah, probably somewhere around there. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Look that up.
I'll look it up real quick.
Because that makes a big difference.
He's long, though.
Because you already know what the comparison's going to be.
Yeah.
No, you do. What is it? You know what it's going to be. 6'6", plays like he's 6'10", from that school.
Oh, wow, I'm drawing a blank.
I just think he's going to draw these Draymond Green comparisons.
Oh, very interesting. I mean, you're right.
I just think that people are going to start saying, oh, well, he's next Draymond Green. Of course he is.
That's very possible.
But why?
Okay, so he's 6'6", 225.
225, okay.
Yeah.
So he's huge.
He's massive. He just plays with an edge. I mean,
He's
raw. He's very raw, but there's a guy who could bring some instant spark and excitement to a second unit in Charlotte. And I think
incredible defender.
We really need that. And I'm really...
So think about who you're describing, though.
Yeah. True.
You know what I'm saying?
True. But there's some... I mean, he does have good intangibles and instincts, but I think Draymond Green's a special case.
Well, of course. Like, no one really expects, but however, who's to say that
Miles Bridges, somebody's got to be the next Draymond Green or closest to it, right?
Right.
Why not Bridges?
So, all right, look, so
there's one more name I just need to throw out. Actually, okay. Real quick. Just one more. I know we're running very short on time here. It's very interesting.
We got to go soon.
This would fit right in with the Michael Jordan, ACC obsession,
mm-hmm.
former ACC players, if you will. But Justin Jackson is right in your backyard.
I love that you brought him up because I have been wanting to talk about
him. And he's going
to
be around there.
I have been wanting to talk about him.
And he's good.
And I'm glad that we're here.
He's good.
Yeah. No, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up.
He's really...
That's a big step
playing his way up the draft.
Let's just talk about this. That's a big step for you.
It is.
That's a huge step
for
you.
That's not what I...
Will would even confirm that. Will... He's talking about a Carolina player who he believes in. That's a huge fucking step.
That's very true.
I'm a Kentucky guy. I'll take the glasses off. I'll put them on the table. They're off my face. They're on the table. Okay? Justin Jackson.
Let me say this.
Justin Jackson
Hold on. Let me say this. I want you to hear this. I'm proud of you.
I
really am.
For the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to... Yeah. Completely take the glasses off.
Right,
set him on the table.
So I'm sorry, I interrupted. So
no, it's fine.
Full Justin Jackson thoughts go.
What this guy is doing this year, mm-hmm. coming off of screens, catching and shooting, is showing us a whole different side of himself.
It's unbelievable.
It's real. He's knocking down shots.
His range is unlimited.
Is there a better college player outside of Malik Monk
who knows? See the Bulldog's jaw right there?
Yeah.
Like, that's a non, like... It doesn't take much for Justin to just pull it from there.
It doesn't. You're
and, right. And in the NBA, all of a sudden, that makes a big difference.
Outside of Malik...
It's contested shots.
Outside of Malik Monk, is there a guy in college basketball who's better at getting to his spot where he knows he's going to take a more efficient... He gets to his spots. He hunts spots. He's showing signs of, some really nice things offensively.
He hunts spots, and I would also say this.
He's a hound. He's an offensive hound.
He hunts spots, but, and Justin has gotten better at knowing where his offense comes from. But, what I would say is that kid has become such a gamer that, he can get his shot anywhere on the floor. And that's what... And on top of that, he's been playing in the pick and roll for Carolina.
That's what I'm saying.
And that, to me, is terrifying.
If you can come into the NBA and you're adept at using screens to your mm-hmm. advantage or coming off screens and then... reading options or taking shots. It's so big. He's hitting 40% of his three-pointers this year, and he's making 2.7 a game right now. 2.7 threes.
That's incredible. I mean...
For a guy who his freshman year... I mean, he's never... Not ever saying he was bad, but, I mean, he's come a long way, and he's a guy that you can't ignore. Now, it would be easy to say, oh, another Carolina guy, another Duke guy, this, that, or the other. But to me, if he's sitting there on draft day, it's really, really hard to ignore.
So here's your question. No, there's on the all right, and then we gotta move. Yeah, we gotta go. We've been talking too long. Is he the ACC player of the year? because that league is loaded.
Kennard's up there.
I think Jackson's
better. Is Bonzi Colson even in that conversation? He's had a good year.
Jackson's a better player, though. Let's be serious.
That's fine. Yeah, he's got a better future.
Right.
But is he a better
That's true.
ACC player?
That's true. You're right.
I mean,
he has a better future.
Yeah,
is he
if I'm drafting
player?
One of the two, I know who I'm drafting, but Kennard's really Kennard had an impressive season.
I don't know that I've seen a guy with better footwork than Luke Kennard, ever. Like, that kid's footwork as a guard, as a wing.
It's nice. He's crafty.
He's the crafty.
And when he gets into the lane, he just moves the ball around until he finds a way to get a shot up.
It's unreal.
He figures it out.
Even you have to admit this. The ACC is just ridiculous this year. It's loaded with ridiculous talent.
Here's another guy. It's the best team
in the league.
Let me just say this real quick. While my glasses are on the table, this is very hard. I may throw up in my mouth a little bit here, but Donovan Mitchell.
I was about to say
Louisville is an absolute stud. That kid.
You know, I watched him play the other night. Don't go off
the Virginia game.
Well, no, because Virginia takes so many guys out of their own game.
You need to watch that Syracuse game. He won in that ball game. I know he fouled out, but I mean.
I watched him in that Carolina game the other night. My thing about Donovan. Mitchell, what's it? Donovan Mitchell.
He's 6'3". Okay. He can get to the basket. He's shooting really well right now. He's explosive. He's crafty.
But he's not a point guard.
He is. He can be. You can put the ball in his hands. He might be like a point guard, as in like.
So he's a creator? Like,
Jamal. Well, not necessarily. Because
that's the only way he's
a scorer, but what are
what
point guards?
Is he?
Donovan Mitchell is a sophomore. But what are point guards in the NBA today? They're more score first guys. I'm looking at Donovan Mitchell, and I said this the other night. I'm sitting here with Will. We're watching the game. I'm like, this guy is reminding me of Dame right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
That's
that
fine. I'm just big on him. It's hard for me to say as a Kentucky fan.
Yeah.
I'm actually pretty big on
him. I mean,
this
look, he's a shot maker. All right, right? He's 6'3". He's a slasher.
He's
aggressive.
Yeah.
He's a good defender.
He's crafty.
Like, he has a lot of things that he does really well, but I just think
he's gritty. He's a Rick Pitino player. He's gritty.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
He mixes it up. I just don't overlook him come draft day. That's a guy who in a couple years we're saying, man, maybe, you know, some people overlook this guy.
That's interesting.
Now, is that necessarily the
best case
for Charlotte? Yeah. I'm not sure, obviously. It's so hard for me to pair people with Kemba in the backcourt. When I think about who Kemba needs to be around, it's so hard for me to even, like, go in a lab and create the perfect guy to be with Kemba.
I've already created him.
Who?
Malik Monk. I created him.
That's the truth.
And then I saw him play today. I created him, and then, like, all of a sudden, he appeared in front of my eyes.
There aren't many guys who are scoring 30 points
Malik
in the
Monk,
second half of college basketball.
Let me say this right now. Let me be on record to saying this. Malik Monk is the best player in college basketball. And for so many different reasons. Lonzo Ball is really, really good, too. And I really enjoy watching him play as well. But let me tell you something about Malik Monk. That guy has a feel for the game, and I think he has... He has certain things that I think make him it's just going to last. It's going to last more than it's going to last for Ball. Ball's shooting motion makes me really nervous. I'm not saying it won't work.
It's the obvious thing to pick on, but it's obvious for a reason.
Right, it's obvious for a reason. Like, I don't know. Like, there's a lot of people, like Kevin O'Connor at The Ringer says this all the time, and I just tend to agree with him, like, there's something about, like, guarding a shot that comes from your chin and then guarding a shot that comes from above your head.
In the NBA, you're talking about centimeters with getting your shot.
You're taught to release the ball from the absolute highest point you can, which is far above your head for a reason. There's a reason you're taught to do that. And one of the largest reasons is it's not guardable. Whether you're 6'1 or 6'10, like, it's really hard to guard a shot when you release it from the top, because when you release it from the top and you're 6'1", well, guess what? When you release the shot, you're 6'4". And all of a sudden, that's really hard to guard. And so Lonzo Ball plays against his own, like, he cheats himself.
And we've seen guys with these, yes, I'm agreeing with everything you're saying. We've seen guys with these different types of shot motions. And some of them actually can be successful. Like, look at Leandro Barbosa, for instance. He's got a different motion, but it's fast. It's quick. Mm. Ball does not. It's very predictable when he's gonna let one fly.
And oh,
could,
yeah,
that could
yeah,
be a detriment. I'm, yeah. I mean, I'm more in the camp of he's going to be a good NBA player. I don't think he's going to be transcended by any means. Malik Monk
I think
could
he's
be a
great.
Prolific NBA scorer for a long time.
Malik Monk, all right, let's make comparisons real quick.
That's tough.
I keep it's saying we got to go.
He's 6'3". If that guy's 6'6 or 6'7", there's just...
Malik Monk's
6'3". Oh, he's so short. 6'3". I see him in person. I see him in person. It's wild. He plays bigger than he is. He's 6'3". He's so...
God, he does not look 6'3".
He's so long.
I know. He's long. He's lazy. He's smart. I'll tell you this. You want me to tell you who I think he could potentially be? Is Bradley Beal.
You think he's Ray Allen?
It's possible.
I mean, I think Ray Allen's like a...
It's possible.
I mean, I think...
I was going for the NBA right now, but yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Damn.
I don't know. I just have always watched Monk, and I've been like, Ray Allen. That's Ray Allen.
Why not?
Like, I'm seeing Ray Allen, like, 15 years later.
It's bold, but it's... I mean, he is that type of shooter. When
but
he gets
you know,
in
like, Ray Allen was a little bit under... Like, under... He wasn't a huge guy. Ray Allen was what?
No.
6'5"?
Sounds right. I'll confirm it.
You know, he's probably taller than Monk, but, like, Monk just reminds me
I think Ray Allen was actually a little... I think he was more... Thinking back on me watching the He Got Game movies, I think Ray Allen was 6'7", 6'8".
No.
No
way.
Way.
No.
Yeah,
not there's
even
no
close.
Way.
6'7"? We can't give him 6'7"?
No.
6'5". Okay, I'm out of my mind there for a second. It's fine.
But I think Monk is Ray Allen.
I think like, he's got a little that, more that, diverse... He's got more diverse game. Man.
And I'll say this. Monk is that...
Outside of hitting shots, though, he's not doing a lot for you. He can rebound when he wants, but he's... He's smart. He makes the right plays, but he's not gonna get you 6-7 assists or rebounds in an NBA game. So that's why I think the Bradley Beal comparison.
He
is
can
there.
Create his own shot, I think.
And but that's and it's what I said to you at the game today. It's what I said to you at the game. Like when Kentucky was struggling earlier, I kept telling Jamichael, like, Cal, please put him in pick and rolls. Like, please let him do that.
Yeah.
Like, not only do NBA scouts foam at the mouth to see that. But I think that's where he could excel.
I agree with that.
You saw with me him make those two passes to Bam with no hesitation
they were
and knowing before
passes.
That second
exactly.
defender even
this
hinted
is,
at the idea
this
of
is
moving
what
over.
Takes Malik Monk's game to the next level. Before he received the ball, he
yep.
knew where he was going with
He's
it.
He's such a high IQ player.
He is. He actually really is. It's fun to watch. When he gets going like that, 30 points in the second half of a top 15 conference championship on the line, nationally televised CBS broadcast, and you're a freshman who goes out and drops 30 points. To kind of put a bookend on your season, because it's coming down the stretch here.
30 points.
And you started
in
out dropping 50,
half.
47, 50 on North Carolina in a national game.
He's incredible. The kid is incredible.
And then you bookend it with a 30-point performance like he had today.
See, here's what's going to happen, though, Joe. I'm telling you right now. And I hope I'm wrong. And maybe I am. But I'm telling you right now, people are going to say he's 6'3". His intangibles aren't great. Like, he'll measure wingspan well.
Yeah, that's
but
fine. He can hop.
The fact
he
that
can
he,
hop.
I'm telling you right now, the fact that he's 6'3". I'm telling you right now.
It's going to push him down the draft.
It's going to push him down the draft board.
And that's fine because at the end of the day.
And you know what?
You're lost.
This is a Hornets podcast,
bring him to
right?
Charlotte.
It's exactly
push him down,
right.
Push if, him down 77.
If Charlotte
push him into the spectrum,
Malik Monk.
Push
like,
him
I
into
would,
the spectrum.
I would lose my mind. I would quit my job.
It would be.
I would be so excited.
It would be an exciting. Man, I can't express this enough. And a really exciting move for the Hornets. It would really put some excitement into that franchise because here's a guy who is just every time he gets the ball, it's like you're salivating. What's going to happen?
What's going to happen?
And,
what's
going to
happen?
Charlotte, let's be real. They need
but
that.
You
I
just
think they could have garnered some of that with
you know,
Devin with Devin
know.
Booker.
Yeah.
They almost. I mean, Monk and Booker are not that different. Let's be real. I mean, I don't.
I agree. I think if you put Booker in this team situation,
thank you,
he would be
yeah.
so much more like Monk.
I mean, the guys that Booker had, you never got to see what he could really do in college because you got Carl Towns beside you. You have, you know, I mean, it was unbelievable.
I'm thinking, and now that you have me thinking, I think you're right. I don't think they're that much different.
They're not. Definitely Monk is more explosive. Actually, Booker's better. Booker's better at attacking the basket right now.
But here would be my question to you. In what way is Monk more explosive?
He's just more athletic. He can finish. He's more just a little more. He's got a little more bite when he drives. It's just a little more, you know. I mean, now Booker's. I mean, Monk can cock it back and throw it down on you. Booker's probably not going to do that, but Booker will find a way to put it in the basket. But regardless of that, neither one of those guys are going to make a living at the rim in the NBA. So let's just forget it. I mean, they're going to make most of their damage outside the paint. So, but it's interesting, you know. So I think Charlotte already had an opportunity to potentially get something like that, right? And they passed on it. So would that happen again if Monk falls down that draft board? Is Michael Jordan going to pass on that?
Of course he is.
It's absurd.
I mean, look at what happened last week. Or 2 weeks ago.
That's going to be like the part of the podcast. Everybody's like, oh, this is the best part of the podcast. Spencer's hating on Michael Jordan. This is perfect.
Yeah. it's too perfect. But it's unbelievable. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. But as a Hornets fan, if I watch this draft and I end it with my head in my hands one more time, I'm just going to cry or something. It's just going to be so devastating.
Yeah, I don't.
It's just tough.
It's a really, really, really tough conversation to have. What I would say is that this has been a really good conversation. Is there anything else that we want to touch on? Because we do have to go. We're actually watching a really badass game right now. Gonzaga is on the ropes against BYU. Anything else you want to talk about Hornets-wise? We had a good draft conversation, and you're definitely coming on the show. We talk more draft. Because Hornets are going to be in the lottery. You can book that.
Yeah, I just want them to figure out who they are again. I said earlier, there's nothing worse than an NBA team without an identity. The Hornets don't have that right now. It's just, I just want them to at least figure out something that they can really rely on to help them win games and just kind of focus on it. We're just so all over the place right now. I don't want to see Frank Kaminsky putting up 18 shots. I don't want to see, you know, MKG struggling this much. It's offensively, it's probably going to happen.
All right, rapid fire real quick. I'm just going to throw some rapid fire questions on you. Like,
yeah, let's end it with this.
You have to answer it in 5 seconds. We got to move on.
All right.
Let's try. All right, Frank Kaminsky, future center. Go. Yay or nay?
No, not for the Hornets.
No.
Not for me.
Okay, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, 3 more years on his deal. Trade him or keep him?
You keep him now because of the age.
I agree.
Period. You can always get rid of him later. You don't want to regret that. Four years from now, when this guy's in his basketball prime of 27, 28 years old. Okay. There's still room. There's still time. You don't panic yet. Your finger's on the button, but you're not pressing it.
Kemba Walker, 2019, same time MKG's deals runs out. Kemba Walker, re-sign him to the Mega Max. Get rid of him. Go.
Man, I love Kemba. To me, he's not a Mega Max.
Tough question.
Because I'm just, and maybe it's just for me because I like my point
guards. It's not fair to ask. It's
no, too soon. I like my point guards a little more, you know.
It's too soon to
creative, ask, but, yeah. As far as, you know, obviously, I'm a big John Wall guy. Not just because of Kentucky, but like, I like the fact that he's hunting a good balance between his shots and getting other people involved. Not that Kemba doesn't do that, but to me, he's not going to lead you into the future. It's hard for me to say that because I really do love him. And not that he doesn't have a place on that team, but I just, yeah, it's hard. But that's my answer.
No, I mean, I think it's totally fair. Do I have another one?
Give me one more.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. See, the Hornets are locked into all these terrible deals. Yeah. It's hard to.
And there's just not much to be excited about right now going on with this season.
All
right.
Another question. Another Hornets question. Stick with us. We're not done yet. I don't know, man. I think that's it. I think I've asked the questions
I wanted to ask. We can stop there for now.
Yeah. I think that's it. Is there anything else that you want to talk about Hornets-wise?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's
I'll give you 5 more minutes. If there's something else you want to talk about Hornets.
The way that you abruptly cease the question is kind of like paralleling the Hornets season right now. It's just we're in such a wait and see mode. I mean, it is what it is at this point. What you're seeing is, you know, what you're getting. It's not thrilling. It's not the end of the world, but we'll see. We'll see what they do.
Just so everyone understands, like
the lack of depth is just destroyed. Yeah, the second unit is a problem.
It is
the best NBA teams have solid second units.
I mean, look, it's what I said on WFNZ the other day. Terrible. Like
we're losing so much traction.
the second unit is a lost cause.
Absolutely.
I applaud the Hornets for going ahead and just saying, hey, we're standing pat. We're going to ride it out for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But here's the reality. If you want to criticize the Hornets, I'll direct you right in the direction to do it. And where you want to do it is saying the Hornets should have re-signed Courtney Lee. That was their chance to stay in the hunt.
The Jeremy Lamb experiment.
Jeremy Lin was always going to get a better offer.
I said the Jeremy Lamb experiment is it's time to move on from that.
Oh, personally. Jeremy Lamb, he is what he is. Like, that guy just wants to take bad shots and wants to hold the ball for, 2 or 3 seconds every time he catches it.
Yeah.
Like, that's clear. But, here's the deal. Last offseason, Courtney Lee was the guy you had to re-sign. And I don't care who you hear from. Every expert will say, well, the Hornets were going to have a really tough time fitting Courtney Lee into their salary cap because they were going to be right up against the tax. But guess what? If they fit Courtney Lee, if they go ahead and sign him, they would have still been below the tax apron. And that's all that matters, right? Like, if you're going for it and you're Michael Jordan,
yeah,
all you got to do is be under the apron. The only thing that matters is, you don't have this full $8 million. You're barely above the cap, below the tax, so you get the full mid-level exception. If they re-sign Courtney Lee, they don't have that. What they have is that they're above the tax.
Sure.
But they're below the apron.
Yeah.
So they get a little less of an exception to spend in the offseason, but it really doesn't matter because everything we're talking about on the court for the Hornets right now revolves around that second, that one bench player that can't, that's missing. And anyways.
It is.
I don't want to go on.
No, it's fine. The bottom line of all that is your second unit has to be better, period.
You want to criticize a move, criticize Courtney Lee not being re-signed. And anything outside of that, I really don't want to have a conversation with you because I think it's stupid.
I agree with that.
But now I'm just taking out my Twitter frustrations on the podcast, so that's not smart.
It's been a pleasure.
Will's here.
Signing off.
Will signing off.
I hope the Hornets aren't signing off on the season, but...
Might be.
I hope they are, actually.
Yeah, it's probably for the best. But knowing the Hornets, they're going to figure it out just enough to get an 8 seed.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
I hope they don't do that.
Hornets Nation... Bear with us.
It's been good. All right, we're out of here. Until next time, Buzzbeat probably be back next week, but we just wanted to bring you guys something tonight, and here it is. So I hope you enjoyed. All right, see you.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.